Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you, and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it, because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Diddy Coley, what's up?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very good. Glad that we are here about to talk about some unions.
There you go.
You've been covering stories for the Boston Globe centered on local food service employees unionizing. And each story seems pretty different from each other. There's two examples I want you to lay out. The first is a story that takes place in Somerville. Can you give us a quick rundown?
Yeah, so in Somerville in particular, there are three, I like to call them sister coffee shops. So that's Diesel, Block, and Forge. They're all owned by the same owners. And they began to unionize in late 2021. And the latest for them is that they just ratified their union contract, which means that they finally finished negotiations. They did some, you know, new rules with scheduling, pay, discipline. So they're formally unionized and have a contract in place as recently as this month.
Okay, so that's that one. The next is a story that takes place in Cambridge at a location of the Milk Bar chain. My teeth hurt just saying it. Tell me about that story.
Yeah, so Milk Bar is essentially a cult-followed bakery. They sell crack pies and cookies and things like that. They opened in Harvard Square in 2019, right across from the Harvard T station. And there's been some controversy there recently because the location is shutting down, actually is already shut down. And union workers allege that it had to do with their process of unionizing. When they announced their union to management 4 hours later, management announced that the location would close. But management alleges that that actually has to do with the lease and that they didn't have very much power over it. And they called the timing of it all an unfortunate coincidence, is the quote.
Yeah, an unfortunate coincidence. Okay. So now, what do these two stories tell you about unionization in our area at businesses like these?
So I'll start by saying that Boston has really become a hub of unionization in a more unconventional way. In particular, there's food service and barista workers unionizing, particularly in the past year and a half or so. What makes these two locations different is that Milk Bar is a nationwide company with a CEO that's not really in the store, and they have one location unionizing. There are several Milk Bars throughout the country. So this was just applicable to these workers. As for, you know, the three Somerville shops, They all have the same owners. There's only 60 employees total for the whole company. And they've actually been able to make some progress. You know, a year is a long time to negotiate a contract, but it's also pretty standard. And to actually have a fully formed union with rules in place is pretty unique. And the other thing is they see their owners, they're in there a lot, they have personal relationships with them, they know their names, and that really changes the tenor of what a workplace looks like and what a union looks like.
Yeah, it sounds like when we discuss unionization efforts, a lot of the conversation gets boiled down to workers good, owners bad. But it's a little more nuanced than that. You know, for a smaller business, you may have to rethink a few more things than you would if you were a bigger business, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the comparable for a bigger business is Starbucks right now. There's 200 Starbucks locations nationwide unionizing and around a dozen just within Massachusetts. And, you know, they're up against CEO Howard Schultz and his truly army of lawyers. And there are allegations upon allegations that the National Labor Relations Board has found credible that they're union busting and closing shops and firing workers because of their union effort. But they've never really met Howard Schultz. You know, he exists in the void and he talks about the union as this terrible thing. But when you come to a small business, what they're worried about is how unions are going to affect their bottom line, which has been particularly impacted during COVID. You know, they are dealing with a dearth of workers. They're dealing with inflation. Coffee prices have gone up. Customers are just not as happy. And workers are also being put in the front line, you know, a couple years ago to tell them to mask, to tell them to social distance. So there's just a lot more tension in these smaller workplaces. And when independent owners are thinking about unions, a lot of the times, at least outwardly, they seem to support them. So for them, it's just a matter of balancing these personal worldviews with what they can actually make happen in their workplace.
What are the challenges to forming a union in a food service establishment, especially a small one? You know, what kind of challenges do they typically face when they try to do that?
So there's a couple of things. The first one is that these are not viewed as traditionally union jobs. They're not coal workers or steel miners or teachers.
Or journalists.
Or journalists. There you go. Yeah. So if a sect of your workforce wants to unionize, you do have to get mostly everyone on board and convince them that a union is worth it at the beginning, which is something that people here have been able to do successfully. But that can be an issue. You know, some Starbucks union elections have lost because workers are like, I don't want to deal with this and I don't think that we need a union. So that's the first thing. The second part of it is actually negotiating a contract, but a lot of unions nationwide that choose to unionize never reach a contract at all because that's a whole other process. You're going to contract negotiating sessions outside of your work. You are not getting paid for it. And in small coffee shops in particular, there's so much turnover. A lot of the times these are college students. These are people who are working part-time while they're, you know, pursuing other careers. And just making sure that you have enough people for that long that really want to make this happen and that have the same goals is a really big barrier to forming a successful union.
You brought up something that I've been thinking about myself as it relates to stakes, because I kind of read the comments to some of your stories, you know, and I see folks just dismissing these unionization efforts because they're, quote unquote, low skilled or, you know, just get a job somewhere else. But tell me why we should take these seriously. What's at stake for these workers that we need to know about?
So I think the stakes are different for different workers. I certainly have talked to some employees that are like, I have been a coffee shop barista for 40 years and I would like to just make enough money to make the rent for my room in my 3-bedroom apartment. So that's—
Wait, 40 years?
Yeah.
I want to drink that latte. Yeah. I know that latte is slamming.
I know, exactly. You must be making an incredible coffee.
That's a skill.
Exactly. And so that's like one part of it. But the other part of it is that these workers have realized really the importance of their jobs over the past couple of years, while people have been telling them that. They're like, thank you for being the place that I can escape while everyone else I know is in quarantine. Mm. You know, thank you for being the only human interaction I have in the day. Mm-hmm. And of course, as we've kind of come out of the virus a little bit, that has changed. But a lot of that attitude helped them realize what their jobs actually mean, whether they do them for 6 months or whether they do them for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And they're more willing now to go out of the way to be like, even if I only do this job for a year, whoever gets this job after me should get the benefits that I did not, mm-hmm. or at least the stability that I did not. So I think that's really the impetus of a lot of this conversation.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. So, the other side now. Have you talked to any business owners at these establishments that we've discussed?
So I have talked to some of them, sometimes on the record, sometimes off the record. Mm-hmm, so it's a mm-hmm. mix. But I do have a sense of their, like, general opinion towards unions.
Let's get messy.
Yeah, messy. Some of them understand, and they want to do it. But, of course, their job at the contract negotiating table is to be like, you're asking for too much money. Mm-hmm. I cannot give you that much money. And so in that way, you know, they sometimes inherently become the villain. But they also are so concerned, and rightfully so, with labor retention at this point. They can't afford to lose that many workers because it's really hard to replace them. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still a nationwide labor shortage, and workers get even more unhappy if they're dealing with less people. So they're willing to work a little bit more with people right now just to keep them on. Mm-hmm. And to also not get a reputation as a union-busting workplace. Mm. Because the reality is, you know, they always say that Boston is an intellectual town. These are people who know about unions. Right. These are people who care about workers, or at least like to say that they care about workers. Mm-hmm. So if you get a reputation that you're union-busting and firing people and not paying people what they deserve, people will choose another coffee shop. We have like a gazillion of them. They'll just stop coming. And so I think that's really a concern for owners as well.
Mm. Now, there's another story I want to ask you about that you covered. Out of Cambridge, a coffee shop chain called Darwin's. They closed all of their locations late last year. And apparently that was linked to the recent unionization of employees at those locations. Is Darwin's some sort of outlier as it relates to these unionization efforts, the tensions between, you know, the unions and the owners of the businesses?
Yeah, Darwin's is a particularly interesting case. And a lot of people, you know, like these commenters that you're talking about, have used it kind of as a example of like unions are going to bring down all of our small institutions.
Yeah.
And it's kind of confusing whether or not that's actually the case. So here's the story with Darwin's. They have four locations. Their flagship, biggest location closed before Thanksgiving. And it kind of seems like it was mostly just for a lease and a personal reason for Steve and Isabel Darwin, who owned the place. But when that location closed, the union was like, okay, what about these workers? Are they going to get shifts at the other three locations? Are they going to be laid off? What is going on? Mm-hmm. And this was all in the midst of contract negotiations. And eventually, at some point, there was a rally at their home, at the owner's home. Mm. And they said that that, quote, accelerated their decision to retire. And they pretty much closed all the locations right before Christmas.
Damn.
And all the workers got some severance pay and it was done. It's confusing because sometimes the Darwins say that it had to do more with their union. Sometimes they say that they were just ready to retire. They'd owned this place for 30 years or so. Mm-hmm. But the union was kind of left to dry, you know, so it's confusing what's kind of next for them. Mm-hmm. But the thing to remember, too, is that a lot of these workers are actually forming a co-op and trying to buy one of these locations and reform Darwin's and own it themselves.
Oh, wow.
So it could be a story of like worker ownership and co-ops and kind of what's the next generation of worker power. Or it could be that, you know, Cambridge just lost a coffee shop that a lot of people really loved.
Hmm. That's really interesting. But one thing I just want to know as well is there any evidence that unionizing food service workers contributes to small business closures?
Currently, no. And the researchers that I've talked to, too, say a lot of the times unionization can help because it increases morale. And that connects to a lot of these other issues we're talking about. People want to stay. Mm. People want to recommend other people to come work here. To date, there's no evidence of that.
Got it. And my last question, as these local unionization efforts continue, what are you looking out for?
So there's a couple of things. One, I do want to see how many of these places are able to get a contract and at what speed. How quickly mm-hmm. are they able to actually reach a negotiation? Because a lot of the times, raises are on hold until then. And in our very, you know, tough economy right now, that can be a hard thing for workers. And the second part of it is a little bit of what we talked about. And if these places do close, what's going to happen to them? Are they going to become worker ownership models? Are they going to close and be replaced by another small business? Are they going to close and be replaced by a chain like Starbucks or, God forbid, like a bank or something like that that takes over the location? Because I think that's something both owners and workers don't want to see. So it's really a question of what's next.
Didi, thank you so much for talking with us. Thanks for coming through to The Common. We really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me again.
That's Boston Globe reporter Diddy Coley. And that's our show for today. Thank you so, so much for listening to The Common. Let us know your thoughts on this show. How do you feel about local unions? Hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok at WBURTheCommon. You can also send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.